to be published, he realized an error in his work actually, and he had to do a lot to retrieve the publication, like it was not published, to make sure that it is not published, and then he actually corrected that errors, and those changes led to like a huge development in the theory of dynamical systems. So earlier, mathematicians and astronomers were trying to find analytical solutions or numerical solutions. Henri Poincaré asked a different type of questions. Rather than asking specifically, like what would be a particular trajectory look like or a particular thing will happen in the solar system, for example, he posed this question. This is from like all his writings are in French. He was a French mathematician, and this is the English translation of that. So he asked qualitative questions that given a three-body problem, like will it be stable? When it will be stable, and when will the bodies diverge apart? So through asking these questions, like he found, he gave a lot of mathematics, and those mathematics like can be said as the founding stone for topology and dynamical systems theory as we know today. So overall, his approach basically changed the way we used to view dynamical systems theory. Instead of asking for analytical solutions for everything or a particular numerical solution like for a given initial condition, general questions like when will your system be stable? So that was in early 1900s and late 1800s. Then at that time we didn't have computers. So, and then there is another work by Mary Cartwright and John Littlewood. They published a series of papers around 1940s. And here I have just mentioned one of the papers. So what had happened was, like, this is a foreword from this book written, like, foreword written by Dyson. And this is what he wrote about Mary Cartwright's work. So the thing was, like, there were radars being used in World War II, and the Radio Research Board had found that when these radars were pushed to high power levels, then they behaved badly. And they thought that whether these equipments are faulty or something else is happening. So they sent a memorandum to the London Mathematical Society, which Mary Cartwright picked up, trying to understand what is happening there. And in her work, she found out that these equations, which governed those amplifiers actually, these mathematical dynamical equations, they can exhibit aperiodic-like behavior actually. So through her work, they understood that it was not the equipment that was faulty, but it was like actually some mathematics. So for the time being, what's the solution that they applied was like they just tried to remain away from those regime where they got aperiodic solutions. So in a sense, like as in towards the end sentences, it is written here that she, along with John Littlewood, actually found aperiodic solutions which were actually chaotic solutions. And then comes the work of Edward Lorange, who was a meteorologist at MIT. So this is the famous three-dimensional Lorange model. So initially, he was trying to predict weather, and he formulated a set of 12 equations for weather modeling, actually. And in those, like, he was trying to simulate those equations on a very primitive computer. So what he did was, like, so he was running a simulation with 6 digits of precision on the computer. So he ran one solution from T0 to T1 one day, and then next day, so the solution, suppose the this is a vector. So suppose the initial conditions at time T0 are x0, and at T1 you get x1, suppose. Now if I run a simulation starting with this value, which was at T1 prime, which lies between T0 and T1, if I run a solution starting with initial condition this for this much time, it in time T1 minus T1 prime, we should still get x1, right? Does that make sense? So this is what he did, that the next time he ran the solution, the simulation again from a middle part of the solution to this time, and he found a different solution. Like, he found that the numbers on the paper started diverging apart. So trying to analyze what was happening. So in computer, like, he was using 6 digits of precision. Like, the numbers are probably exactly given here in the end. And on paper, he was printing just 3 digits of precision. So when he input this initial condition at T1 prime, it was with 3 digits of precision rather than 6 digits. So that 4th digit difference actually amplified. And then trying to analyze what is happening, actually, he found this chaos theory. So, and this is the famous paper, like, in 1963 that he wrote. It has been cited over more than 25,000 times. And this is the abstract of the paper where he described these chaotic solutions. So, and then, like, although chaos was discovered in 1963 in that paper, by Edward Lorange, this phenomenon was not termed chaos then, actually. It was termed chaos in this paper for the first time. Period 3 implies chaos. That is a 1975 paper. So that's how the term was coined for this phenomenon. So this is just a brief history of chaos theory, like the classical chaos theory and dynamical systems a bit. Before starting today's lecture, I just wanted to point out one thing. Yesterday, someone had asked, how do we find these period 2 solutions, actually, for the maps or period n solutions? And one way, numerically, I had explained that. Theoretically, I just want to say, if you have a map, xn plus 1 equals to f of xn. Now, to find fixed points, you just solve this equation, right? now to find period 2 solutions. Like period 2 solutions will be fixed points of, if you iterate the map twice, so f of x, if this is equal to x, this will give you period 2 solutions. This equation will also give you fixed point solutions, because the fixed points are also period 2 orbits in a sense, like theoretically. But there will be extra solution which are not fixed points. So that's how analytically you, and then you can do this for several times, like for finding period 3 orbit, you can iterate it 3 times, right? And equate it to x. So this way, like, you can find period 3, and likewise you can find any period n solution. So it is just briefly I wanted to mention about yesterday's lecture. So let us start with trying to understand the dynamical systems theory a bit. So what are dynamical systems? Any system that evolves in time is a dynamical system. And to model any dynamical systems, what do you do? You'll try to extract the minimum number of variables to describe a system. So for example, if you're studying a harmonic oscillator, for example, the variables will be position and momentum. So if you know the position and momentum of your harmonic oscillator at every point of time, then you know that evolution basically. So mathematically, dynamical systems can be understood as a triple, where x is the state space or phase space. So x consists of all, x is a kind of a vector for finite dimensional systems, which consists of all the variables whose evolution you need to understand the system. So in physics, in Hamiltonian systems, you generally call them as phase space. In dynamical systems theory, you will see the term state space used a lot. So just to avoid confusion, I'll use the word phase space in this course. So phase space, when I am talking about Hamiltonian systems, phase space will comprise of generalized coordinates and generalized momenta of a system. And when we are talking about general dynamical systems, any kind of general dynamical systems, for example, the Lorentz model that I just showed, x, y, z were the variables. And those three variables will comprise of the phase space. T is a number set which is either equivalent to the integer or the real number. Like, this is basically the time. So you can have either discrete time dynamical systems or continuous time dynamical systems. For example, if you want to study the population dynamics of some species of fish in a pond, like, so it is, you generally will study it like month over month or year over year. So it is a discrete system in that way. On the other hand, like harmonic oscillator that I talked about is a continuous time dynamical system. So you study the continuous evolution of the variables. So when you talk about discrete systems, your time set is an integer. And when you are talking about continuous time dynamical systems, your time set is a real number. And then you have the evolution operator basically that evolves your variables in time. So this is what mathematically a dynamical system is. Like, so just giving some definition, like this is a bit just mathematical, but it's fine. If you are not inclined towards mathematics, you can, like, mathematical definition, you do not need to worry a lot about that. Just for completeness, I am writing these definitions mathematically. So phase space is the set of all possible states of the system. And time set I already described, Z or R, depending on whether you are dealing with discrete time dynamical systems or continuous time dynamical systems. And generally, continuous time dynamical systems are also referred to as flow, and discrete time dynamical systems are generally said as maps, like just a nomenclature. So, next is the evolution operator. It is a map defined on the phase space. So this evolution operator will be identity for t equals to 0, and for time independent systems, which are called autonomous systems, you will also have phi of this composition property. More definitions, and then we will discuss our 2D dynamical system. What is an orbit? So orbits are also in MAPS, for continuous time dynamical systems, we generally refer to them as trajectories. And for discrete time dynamical systems, we generally refer to them as orbits. So, it is an ordered subset. Of the phase space X starting at X naught. Belonging to this phase space. So, orbit of X naught is basically the list of X's such that X equals to the evolution operator applied on X naught for all time t belonging to this time set such that phi t X naught is defined. Does this definition make sense? Last definition I want to give right now is a phase portrait, and it is the union of all possible orbits. We will be dealing a lot with phase portraits, just defining it mathematically. This is the union symbol. So we just defined the orbit of X naught. So let us take an example. Like if we take harmonic oscillator, what are the variables I just said? If we consider harmonic oscillator as our dynamical system. Yeah, that's right. Variables are position and momentum. What is the time set? The time set I had decided, time set is either integer or real line, right? So for harmonic oscillator, what is our time set?
Yes.
Real line, right? And if we start at any initial condition, we know that, so this is momentum, this is position. We know that for rescaled position and momentum, it will be a circle, right? So every circle is one orbit. And if I start at every possible initial condition and draw all the possible orbits, this will be called the phase portrait. So graphically, you understand like what is an orbit and or a trajectory and a phase portrait. So now let us study two-dimensional continuous time dynamical system. So do you know the word I just referred to, autonomous and non-autonomous? Like autonomous dynamical systems are those which are time independent, like your functions that I will define here, like you have dx by dt, which is also written as x dot, will be some function of some function. So if it is time independent, it is autonomous system. And if I include time dependence in it, then it is called non-autonomous system. So for now, most of the time, we will be dealing with time independent systems, that is autonomous systems. And sometimes when I deal with time dependent system, I'll let you know. So if I don't specify, you can assume that we are talking about time independent systems. So two-dimensional. Continuous time so let us consider a general two-dimensional dynamical system. Where P and Q are well-defined functions of X and Y variables. So what, one thing you can, given the functions P and Q, generally you would try to solve it analytically. If not, if you can't, you will try to solve it numerically. But we want to have a qualitative understanding of what of all the like what are the possibilities of an orbit in the phase portrait. Like what can they look like? What are the simplest points to study for this dynamical system, a 2D dynamical system, for example? Like equilibrium points, right? We talked about equilibrium points. At equilibrium points, they don't evolve. So if we can find the equilibrium points, they are the easiest to study. And then we can study the neighborhood of the equilibrium points by local linearization, actually. So let X star be an equilibrium point. Of the system. I'll write equilibrium as EQ in short and point as theta in short. So that P of you can see that these functions will be zero at x naught, y naught, right? Because x naught, y naught is an equilibrium point. So the phase portrait close to the equilibrium point will be determined by the stability of this equilibrium point. Like if this equilibrium point is stable, if we start with an initial condition close by, they will try to come towards this equilibrium point asymptotically. And if it is an unstable point, it will diverge from it. So to determine the stability, we perturb this in equilibrium point and study this locally linearized system. X, we perturb X with a term xi, and then Y with a perturbation eta. Basically, we take this x naught and y naught point and we add a perturbation to it, xi 0 and eta 0, and then try to study how these xi and eta evolve. That will tell us how this perturbation evolves. So, we'll try to find a differential equation for them in the local linearization regime. So we'll use Taylor expansion of the functions p and q to study the evolution of these perturbation. Do you think we can study the perturbation using first order Taylor expansion always, or will there be cases we will not be able to study the evolution of the perturbation by just first order perturbation from Taylor expansion? Just a question to think about. So we are expanding these functions pxy and qxy at x naught, y naught. What will the first order perturbation Taylor expansion look like? First term will be px naught, y naught plus the partial derivative. And okay, 1 minute. So first try to test. Thank you. partial derivative of p at x naught y naught times the perturbation in x naught, which is xi, plus partial derivative of p with respect to y at x naught y naught times eta plus higher order terms in the Taylor expansion and similarly we can do it for the function qxy and that will be plus higher order terms. This Taylor expansion is clear, right, to everyone? So now we know that these terms are zero, right? Since x naught y naught is equilibrium point. So using that and neglecting the higher order terms, we'll get the differential equation for xi naught to be equal to del p by del x at x naught y naught into xi plus del p by del y into and so these will be constants. Can you see that? Like the partial derivative of p will not be a constant, but then we evaluate the partial derivative at the equilibrium point, so that will give you a number, right? So we assume those number to be a and b. And this is the evolution equation for eta dot. It will be del q by del x which we write as c xi plus d eta. So now we have two first order differential equations. Any idea how we can solve it for these variables xi and eta? Like these are first order differential equations with constant coefficients. So this is a linear differential equation. So, any idea how we can solve this?
Differentiate one and substituting the other.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, you were saying? Yeah, that is also a method. So, we will here actually double differentiate the first equation. So, through that, we will get xi double dot is a xi dot plus b eta dot, right? And we'll substitute for eta dot. We want an equation like Justin's eye to be able to solve it, or the other method that you said, but we are following here this. So, plus b times eta dot is p xi plus d eta . So here we can see that from here we can see that we can find an equation for eta, right? Eta will be equal to 1 by b of psi dot minus a xi, right? So we can substitute eta here and we'll get an equation for in terms of xi variable and its derivatives. So this is will simplifying this equation, we'll get xi double dot minus a plus d xi dot plus a d minus b c xi equals to 0. Is everyone with me here? So now we will be looking for solutions to this equation. This is a general second order differential equation in single variable. So you may know that the solution of these are in terms of exponentials. So the general solution of this you can try to substitute, for example, exponential of lambda t in this equation and see that this will satisfy this equation actually. Like you double differentiate it, so you will get lambda square exponential of lambda t minus single differentiation lambda of. And if you do that, you can see that it satisfies this equation for specific values of lambda, not for all values of lambda, but specific values of lambda. So that is the general solution. The solution we will be talking about the solution here, where AD minus BC is not equal to 0. That is a specific case. We'll deal with that later. So when this holds, then xi t, a general solution can be written as where lambda 1 and 2 are given by . So here you can see that how did we arrive at that lambda. If you substitute it here in this equation and double differentiate it and then you will get this equation, exponential of lambda t times lambda square minus a plus b lambda plus a d minus b c equals to 0. This is what you will get here if you substitute exponential of lambda t in this equation, and lambda is the solution of this quadratic equation. So the lambda that I have written here, if you want to understand how did I get there. So here a and b are in general complex integration constants actually, and will depend on initial conditions, and can lambda 1 and lambda 2 be complex as well? They can be, right? Yeah. And I said that we are excluding this situation right now where AD minus BC equals to 0. So if AD minus BC equals to 0, can you say what will happen to lambda?
It'll be 0.
Yeah, that's right. So we are not dealing with that situation right now when one of the lambdas is 0. Now, eta t, we had seen that eta t is 1 by b of xi dot minus a xi. So, through that, we will find the solution for eta t. So, when you substitute xi dot and xi from here, you will get something like this, a by b of lambda 1 minus a exponential of lambda 1 t plus b by b of lambda 2 minus a exponential of lambda 2 t. So just so these are the solutions of lambda of xi and eta, the perturbed system in the linearized regime. So we can we had also formulated this equation in this so you can see that the determinant of this gives this condition. So we are assuming the case the determinant of M is not equal to 0. So whenever the determinant of M is 0 or one of the eigenvalues of 0, then to study the stability near this equilibrium point, we will need to use higher order terms in the Taylor expansion. So currently what we have done, we have taken an equilibrium point of the two-dimensional dynamical system and we perturbed the equilibrium point, and we are trying to see how that perturbation evolves in time. So to understand that, we have formulated a system of linear equations for the perturbation using the Taylor expansion of the differential equation, just the first order Taylor expansion. So there will be times when the first order Taylor expansion will not be able to tell about the stability of the equilibrium point, and in that case you will need to go to higher order Taylor expansion. So the stability of equilibrium point depends on the evolution of xi and eta. So we will see that the equilibrium point is stable if perturbations decay and when will the perturbations decay, like when will this function decay? Can you give me a condition of on lambda 1 and lambda 2? So whenever the so these numbers can also be complex, right? So if both of them have negative real parts, the complex part can be anything, but if both lambda 1 and lambda 2 have negative real parts, then the perturbations will decay, and that will imply that this equilibrium point is stable. On the other hand, if both of them have positive real parts, then the perturbations will grow and the equilibrium point will be unstable. And then there can be case where the real part is zero. The lambda 1 and lambda 2 can be imaginary, like not zero, but they can be purely imaginary, and the real part of lambda 1 and lambda 2 is zero. In that case, like depending on your system, you may need to go to higher order. In dissipative systems, you will see that in dissipative system we need to go to the higher order Taylor expansion to understand the stability. But in Hamiltonian systems, which are conservative systems, like you will often come across cases where this lambda 1 and lambda 2 are purely imaginary, they have zero real part. In that case, the perturbations neither decay nor grow. So those equilibrium points are kind of neutral in that sense. So we will draw phase portraits of, so when lambda 1 is less than zero. So let us consider the case for real lambda 1 and lambda 2. So when lambda 1 and lambda 2 are negative, then there will be eigenvectors corresponding to lambda 1 and lambda 2 that you can determine from here. Like if you diagonalize this matrix M, your eigenvalues between will be lambda 1, lambda 2, and there will be eigenvectors corresponding to lambda 1, lambda 2, right? I'll call them V1 and V2 are the eigenvectors. So suppose these are V1 and V2, and this is our equilibrium point. Suppose, like we have shifted the equilibrium point to the origin, just for simplicity. What do you think, like if I start with any initial condition here, how will it evolve? Like you can try to draw it on your notebooks. It will. So first of all, let us see, if I start with any initial condition here, it will.
Should be ellipse, right? In general.
No, this won't be.
It's just V1.
So what will this initial condition do? Where will it go? These are the eigenvectors.
Decays in origin?
Yeah, that is right. So it will go towards this. I start here, it will go towards this, right? So likewise, both the lambdas are negative here. So this will go towards this, this will go towards this. What about a point here?
Depends on the magnitude of lambda.
Yeah. So depending on the magnitude, it can go like this, or it can go like this, whichever one is bigger. In which direction is it decaying faster? So depending on that, like, so this is your face portrait, basically. Like the qualitatively, this is how your face portrait will look like. So our goal in this course is, like, at least for the part of dynamical systems theory, is to understand the understand the dynamics through the face portrait. What is happening in the face portrait actually, rather than exactly solving the differential equation. So in the end, your goal will be to visualize it on a graph. So this is how it will look like for the case of negative lambdas here. So we'll deal with the other cases tomorrow. Thank you.